Hey folks, this is To Know the Land, broadcasting from the Treaty Territories of the Mississauga of the Credit on 93.3 FM at the University of Guelph. Maybe you're listening to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen to your podcast. It's a show about our connections with the land base, how we interact with the land, how we learn about the land, how we defend the land. My name is Byron, and today I want to talk about wood rots. Why? Because I see them places, and I didn't know what they were for a long time, and I want to learn more about them all the time because I continue to see them. And wood rots play such an important role in all life on Earth and in our smaller ecosystems and how they make things accessible for other forms of life to absorb, to eat, to consume, to break down, whatever. I've talked about my appreciation for decay for a long time. I love dead stuff. I love learning about dead stuff. Before I was really focused, well, I shouldn't say before, in the process of becoming an avid naturalist and learning these skills and practicing them, I used to work at hospice because I have this idea that the culture we currently live in is very, very sick, very unhealthy, and in its death throes. Perhaps it's a little much to say, but, you know, I think it is. And I think that we need to learn how to help things die in a good way. And I don't mean like, what do I mean? I mean, at hospice, my work was to support people who were dying to make sure they had all the things they needed and were comfortable as possible. So in this journey towards death and into death, that they can spend as much good time in a good way with their families or by themselves in a fulfilling way that isn't scary, promotes a sense of well-being and calm while they make the last transition of life. And I think that we need to do this with the culture. We need to find ways to enable this culture to die and make space for new things, new ways of being in the world that honor all other forms of life, not just the human, that honor other human lives, not just the dominant forms of human culture and human life. And we need to help we need to help things change. And so I always wanted to get these, I have a bunch of midwife friends, and I always wanted to get folks from hospice together and midwives together, rad folks, to have conversations about what can people at hospice be doing, or what can our practice, how can we inform this transition? And then what can we learn from the midwives who help birth new life, how they help mothers to transform things and to create space in the world for new things to grow? What are the necessary conditions? What are the practices that we do to tend the body in that time to help new things emerge and grow? And we need both those things. Life feeds on life, as Tool once wrote in one of their songs. I can't even remember which. Disgustipated? Is that the song? I think so. But yeah, we need to find ways to do that. And I've loved decay. I love things breaking down. I love decomposition. I love death because of those reasons. It sounds really morbid in our death-fearing culture, but I think it's not. It's a celebration, you know, like same thing when I come across an animal on the land that has been eaten. It can be perceived as very sad, but we're forgetting those that consume that animal. We're forgetting, you know, all the little carrion beetles that are able to feed their young now, or a fox who's able to carry back part of the carcass for their young or for themselves. We forget about the turkey vultures, and we forget about all the forms of life which will benefit from the nutrient dump that happens when things die. And I love images of things breaking down in the context of, like, maybe you've learned about whale fall, where when whales die in the ocean and they sink down to the bottom of the ocean, all sorts of animals come in and start to feed on that corpse. And lots of research has been done in recent years about who attends to these whale falls, who helps things break down. And it just gets so exciting because, you know, energy cannot die. It just changes form. And these transformations are happening all over the place all the time. What does this have to do with wood rot? Wood rot is the process by which trees break down. And it's just that simple. And the different fungi are involved, different kinds of fungi are involved with different kinds of trees and how they break it down. And I just want to learn more. Again, I said at the beginning that these wood rots facilitate nutrient breakdown to allow for new forms of life. They make it more accessible for other forms of life to uptake. And that's so good. That's so important. How do we spread the wealth? How do we exchange these resources so that they come from the limited few in the trees, locked up in the trees, and then get spread around to, you know, tiniest little bacteria, the fungi itself, other fungi which may not be causing the rot necessarily, to little microbes and insects, and then creating space for the birds that eat the insects or the birds that nest in the tree cavities, and then to even some of the ways that the wood rot inspires people or works with people to create art and stains, and there's just these beautiful things that happen, these trophic cascades that are really cool to explore and get inspired by. And it's all because of this breakdown. It's all because of the decay and the death. So I wanted to read a couple texts today, read a couple things to look at wood rot, specifically white rot and brown rot, which I have talked a little bit about on the show before in the Death and Decomposer episode. Sounds kind of the same. But it's a little bit different because I'm not going to be focusing on the deadly Gallerina mushrooms in this episode. Instead, I'm going to be thinking about, just the wood rot in the context of white rot and the brown rot. And the two are different, and the two are identifiable in the field. And I'm going to get to this in the books, and I don't mind if I repeat some things today because I really want it to sink in. But the brown rot looks cubist in form. When I come across a tree, a down tree, I often, laying on its side, I come up to it, and the wood's got an orangey-brown hue, and it seems like breaking down and compartmentalized into brown cubes. And that is the brown rot, or cube rot, as some people call it. And then there's white rot. And the white rot, when I come across, I see it as long and stringy strands of fiber. It's like a wood fiber. And then It is wet often. It really holds moisture. You can even reached into the trunk of a tree the other day, and I pulled out big chunks, and I started squishing it, and you can feel the moisture drip into your fingers, and then squeeze it out right out of that stringy, lignin-y, fibrous wood remains from the inside of the tree. It is very, very squishy, very soft, and yeah, very, I would imagine other animals can really rip it apart easily as well, looking for food or other things. which resource should I start with first? Okay, I'm going to start with Alan E. Bessett, Diana G. Smith, and Arlene R. Bessett's Polypores and Similar Fungi of Eastern and Central North America, out on the University of Texas Press. I have referred back to this book a couple of times on the show because it's a fantastic book. It is a very good book. So if you are curious about it, if you're interested, look it up. It's a good one. So I think that it's got a lot of information. And this was published 2021. Great book. Okay. Types of fungal decay. Given sufficient space, water, nutrients, and light, a tree seed can take root, grow strong, and defy decay for hundreds of years. A healthy tree will be able to live a long life resisting and surviving breaches caused by animal, insect, and fungal invaders by using various toxic chemical deterrents, as well as barriers such as bark and lignin, to prevent infestation and decay of heartwood. Cells in sapwood can detect fungal and insect penetration and limit their progression. By releasing volatile compounds and communicating via connections with mycorrhizal fungi, infected trees alert neighbors to discourage invasion by emitting similar repellents. Conifer resins respond to attempted breaches by sealing off intrusions, often trapping invaders in hardened amber. Fungi that manage to penetrate the outer bark and enter the inner bark can also temporarily be walled off by the formation of cankers. But trees are not immortal. Trees become susceptible to invasion because they suffer wind damage, heavy snow, ice storms, lightning, fires, frost, cracks, too much or too little rain, and sun scalding. Entry by fungi, insects, and other invasive species occurs at potential weak spots, including lenticels, furrows, cracks at junctions with branches, debarking scrapes made by bears, moose, porcupine, and deer, wounds from trimming or lumbering equipment, roots severed by lawnmowers, bulldozers, backhoes, all provide fungi and insect fungal farmers access to debarked and damaged wood. Covering tree roots with too much topsoil, wood chips, asphalt, or concrete for streets and sidewalks also limits the tree's access to sufficient oxygen, water, and nutrients. Excretions of animals that frequent the trees, such as squirrels, chipmunks, field mice, moles, rabbits, sapsuckers, woodpeckers, and other birds, typically contain fungal spores, fungal filaments, and yeasts. Should they be deposited on an exposed damp wood, they can serve as vectors for inoculation. Once penetration of the hyphae takes place, it can be expected that a succession of fungi will enter the tree and feed on the remains amenable to their respective enzymatic activities, provided the wood is wet, but not waterlogged or dry. Wood with a moisture content above 26 to 32% is suitable for the initiation of fungal infiltration, expansion, and colonization. Wood rot, as the term is used in this book, is defined as the deterioration of wood caused by the enzymatic activities of fungi and certain bacteria. Wood decomposing polypores traditionally have been assigned to one or of two major categories, white rot fungi and brown rot fungi, depending on whether they are capable of degrading all of the components of wood or only specific portions. Recent analysis suggests that although this dichotomous categorization is useful, there are known instances of fungi that are capable of obtaining the nutrient requirements by using enzymatic mechanisms not found in either group. Soft rot, an additional and important type of rot caused by ascomycetes rather than polypores, and will not be discussed further in this book. Bum, bum, bum. Maybe I'll get to that another time. Broadly speaking, white rot fungi produces digestive enzymes capable of breaking down all three of the components of wood, cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin, to meet their nutritional requirements. Several types of white rot include white pocket rot, spongy white rot, stringy white rot, and heart rot. Residual material found during the late stages of white rot decay consists of cellulose fibers that remain. These fibers are typically stringy, hydrophilic, and whitish due to bleaching from oxidization and the loss of lignin. Soft and wispy, these cellulose strands are capable of absorbing water and contributing moisture to the surrounding soil. They are unstable, however, and will eventually disappear because of the decomposition activity of soil bacteria. I just want to correct myself because earlier I said that that was the cellulose, the stringy stuff, or pardon me, the lignin, but it is the cellulose. The stringy stuff is the cellulose. The hard stuff is the lignin, stuff that's really difficult to break down. So the brown rot, what remains is the lignin, and the white rot, what remains is some of that stringy cellulose stuff. Soft and wispy, these cellulose strands are capable of absorbing water and contributing moisture to the surrounding soil. They're unstable, however, and will eventually disappear because of the decomposition activity of soil bacteria. There is considerable interest in using white rot fungi that are capable of selectively decomposing lignin before breaking down cellulose and hemicellulose for purposes of biopulping. The resulting components are enriched with nutrients that can also serve as supplementary food for ungulates, whose fungal gut microorganisms can break these down. Today, white rot fungi are the dominant type of decay fungi of dead tree wood. In fact, they are significantly more plentiful and varied than their brown rot counterparts. Although they are angiosperm specialists, white rot fungi are major decomposers of dead broadleaf tree wood and conifers. In the distant geological past, they were principal recyclers of the earliest conifers, the dominant group of trees until about 50 million years ago. Between 180 to 140 million years ago, angiosperm lineages began to take root and diversify, giving white rot fungi a novel mega niche to exploit. White rot fungi existed prior to the evolution of brown rot fungi, possibly since the close of the Carboniferous period. I'm going to keep reading that, but I just wanted to bring up something that somebody said recently, and I want to know more about this. And they said that maybe white rot fungi is the reason that trees break down. Like perhaps there was no breakdown of trees or lignin before white rot fungi. I think some insects carry other organisms or other bacteria or maybe perhaps other fungi in their what can be called a gut, in their bellies. And that's how they break down woody particles and woody material. But I don't know. I'm not sure. And that's something I really want to know more about. Is white rot fungi the only method on Earth for breaking down lignin? What other methods are there? Both like human manufactured methods, mechanical methods, or chemical methods that humans have come up with? Or are there other, quote-unquote, natural ways of breaking it down? I don't know. Something I'd like to know more about. Brown rot fungi. Brown rot fungi produce oxalic acid and hydrogen peroxide, chemicals that break cellulose and hemicellulose into fibers. Cellulose and hemicellulose fibers into smaller sections, which are further broken down into sugars that are gradually absorbed by the fungus. As is the case with white rot, there are several different kinds of brown rot. Brown heart rot, cubical brown rot, root and butt rot. Butt rot, I love it every time. And brown pocket rot. Brown rot fungi leave the substrate so crumbly that the lignin remaining after the cellulose is digested, is powdery and dry. It usually appears to be the form of cubical blocks that eventually disintegrate to a fine dust while contributing to soil formation. This residual material is extremely stable and can persist in the soil for hundreds of years unless degraded by soil fungi. Fewer than 6% of wood decay polypores are brown rot fungi. Today, they are most prevalent in conifer woods throughout the Northern Hemisphere, in cooler zones of the planet where there are fewer species of broadleaf trees. Examples include Phomatopsis palustris and Glowiophyllum superium. Notable brown rot polypores that are generalists and fruit on broadleaf wood are Phomatopsis betulina, Diadela crassina, Lytoporus cineatus, and Lytoporus sulfurius. Lytoporus sulfurius. I think, is that chicken of the woods? As noted previously, various saprotrophic and parasitic white rot and brown rot polypores should not be viewed as completely distinct kinds of wood decay fungi. Some fall within a continuum of rot types in which cell layers are partially or totally removed and replaced by the mycelia of specific fungi. Finally, it's important to note that a single tree can be host to both brown rot and white rot fungi. And I got to see this the other day. That was really cool because you could see that on one side of the tree, it was very brown rot-y, like very hard, tough wood when you tapped on it. But then as you reached around the other side or you looked around the other side, you could see that the brown rot was softer and it was breaking down because of the white rot moving in or encountering that same space, taking up different, you know, nutrients that the brown rot hadn't got to first. I think that's what that was my read on it. Perhaps the brown rot came second, but I think based on the moisture, I would say that the brown rot came first and then the white rot came after and broke it down even more. Yeah, again, that was from Polypores and Similar Fungi of Eastern and Central North America by Alan E. Bessett, Diana G. Smith, and Arlene R. Bessett, put out on the University of Texas Press in 2021. That book is great. And I think, actually, that that is perhaps the best explanation of brown rot and white rot that I have ever read. But I wanted to read some more. But first, some common species that we might encounter of these rots. Ganoderma aplanatum, if you remember that one, Ganoderma aplanatum, the artist bracket or artist conch, as some people call it. That one is I think it's a white rot fungi on the broadleaf trees. Yeah, it causes a white rot. And then another cool one that causes a white rot is the pheasant's back or dryad saddle, Cereoporus squamosus. That's also a white rot inducing polypore. And then some brown rot inducing polypores include Phomatopsis betulina, or what was the older name? Piptoporus betulinus, birch polypore. Phomatopsis betulina, I think, is the new name. But yeah, birch polypore, and then Phomes fomentarius, or Phomes excavatus, if you're looking at like cryptic species, like the tinder conch. The tinder polypore, that's also another brown rot fungi that are pretty common that I think a lot of us know and maybe encounter, which is cool. It's like we can get these representatives, Ganoderma aplanatum, the Phomes fomentarius or excavatus. We can encounter these species all the time and we know them in their fruiting body form, but to look at the impacts that they have on the forest ecosystem, on the global ecosystem, is also really cool. It's like seeing the next layer beyond just the superficial, right? We can identify the mushroom, but then what else can we know about the mushroom? What ecosystem services are being done with that mushroom? And so I've always longed for, especially for fungi, is to have resources that explain the next layer, the hidden layer beyond what we just see superficially. And I know that will come. I know that will come as people get more and more into studying fungi, but it's not here yet, and I want to know it. I'm going to read a section from Field Guide to Tree Diseases of Ontario by C. Davis and T. Mayer, and this was put out by the Ministry of Natural Resources and the Government of Ontario in 1997. I'm so lucky that I have this book. It's helped me identify all sorts of weird diseases that are going on leaves and trees. And it has plenty that I have not seen before. But it's a nice little small pamphlet. I don't know if you can get it anywhere. There's probably a PDF of it online. But on the section for stem decay of hardwood and conifers, it just says the hosts are hardwood and conifers. Some important conifer decay fungi are Styrium sanguinolentum. I think it's also called bleeding conifer crust. And then we've got Felinus pinei, or red ring rot. It also describes Felinus tremulae. This is probably the one I know most, is the aspen trunk rot. Or aspen bracket. Kind of looks like a hoof fungus, but it usually has cracks along it and is darker and black. I've seen that one around a bunch. Aspen trunk rot, I think, is what most people know it as. So those are some that are found on conifers and hardwoods. And this is the symptoms. The most obvious external symptom of stem decay are the presence of fruiting bodies on the outside of infected trees. These structures are an expression of internal decay and can appear as conchs, mushrooms, etc. When available, their morphology is used to identify the causal agent of the decay. Internal symptoms vary depending on the species of fungus present. In early stages of decay, the rot color can be highly variable. In the final stages, however, all are white or brown. White rot fungi are capable of digesting both carbohydrates, cellulose, and lignin, whereas brown rots cannot digest lignin, thus appear brown. The texture is also variable, but is usually classified as stringy or cubical in nature. The location of the rot also varies depending on the species and can include heartwood, sapwood, root, butt, trunk, or a combination of these. Spores produced by the fruiting bodies are the main method of spread, with infections usually occurring at branch stubs or wounds on the tree. Some root slash butt rot decay fungi can spread. Why can I not laugh? I always laugh at the butt rot. I'm sorry. I'm not going to edit it out. Maybe I'm a visual learner, a visual interpreter. And so every time I hear butt rot, how would that present on a human? Remember, maybe when you were a kid, you had a gerbil or a hamster and they had like wet tail. Is that butt rot? Is that what butt rot is? Oh, I'm weeping. My gosh. Okay, yeah, butt rot. Gotta investigate that. There's probably some real human diseases out there that could be classified as butt rot. I'm going to learn more about butt rot to the point where it's no longer funny. I hope someday. Spores produced by the fruiting bodies are the main method of spread. Okay, enough. I may have to pause the recording. Are the main method of spread, with infections usually occurring at branch stubs or wounds on the tree. 1 second. I'm just going to pause this for a moment, get my giggles out. Okay, I think I'm ready. Some root decay and trunk decay fungi can spread through the forest soil or by root contact. That's kind of neat. Root to root, and then they can share the fungi that way. I guess that makes sense, but never thought of it before. Decay fungi destroy heart and sapwood and reduce the tree's value or make it unmerchantable. Well, that's fine. Leave them alone. Trees with extensive stem but root decay are easily broken and toppled with high winds. God damn. Some root butt decay fungi are capable of killing trees. Most stem decay fungi have a damage rating of 1. And I'll get into the damage rating some other time because I think that's a really interesting classification system. That, again, was the Stem Decay of Hardwoods and Conifers from the Field Guide to Tree Diseases of Ontario, published in 1997 by the National Resources or Natural Resources Canada and the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources, C. Davis and T. Mayer. Yeah, there's probably PDFs of it online. I'll try and find one for the show notes, and then that way y'all can check it out as well. Is there another thing? Yeah, there's maybe, you know, I'm going to read this one more. One more little thing. It's probably going to say the exact same stuff. This is from the textbook Plant Pathology by George N. Agrios, 4th edition. When was this published? 1997? The other one was 97. Oh, this one also was 97. Great. It's so nice to have these older textbooks, you know, just kicking around. A friend of mine is supposed to be giving me some newer textbooks on plant pathology. He's an orchardist, Matt Soltis, if you've listened to previous shows, the urban orchardist, because I've been helping him with identifying insect sign on the trees that he's been working on in different people's orchards. And he's been teaching me about other decay and other signs to look for damage on fruit trees, which is kind of cool to have a pal like that. Thank you, Matt. Wood rots and decay caused by basidiomycetes. Huge losses of timber trees in the forest and in harvested wood are caused every year by the wood rotting basidiomycetes. Okay, I'm just going to stop here for 1 second. I love wood rot. I love learning about it. And I'm so grateful. How do I describe this? I am grateful that people have researched it and studied it and written about it for people to learn about. But the reason why people have studied, written, and worked so hard is not because of like an unadulterated interest and curiosity, but it's because of capitalism. It's because of turning trees into resources, and that these fungi can damage the potential for economic output or economic gain from these trees. And when everything has an economic value in capitalism, that's when it's deemed valuable to research and learn about. If you remember in a blog post I wrote recently on the website, toknowtheland.com, there is a section on golden canker, which infects the pagoda dogwood, alternate leaf dogwood. What's the Cornus alternifolia? And there's not very much research done on that because pagoda dogwoods or alternate leaf dogwood does not have, these are the same species, they do not have much quote unquote economic value. So there's not been a detailed research into these trees at all and their infections, which is kind of insulting, kind of frustrating, highlights the inefficiencies of capitalism, and highlights, you know, in a capitalist model, what counts, what matters, what's important. And so I just want to name that as a challenge to the narrative that these books, these resources that I am sharing, have, and that they're based on writing for forest managers, arborists, for plantation managers to get economic value out of the trees they're growing, not just for the trees themselves. It's all related to money. So I just wanted to name that and say I disagree with that model of viewing the world, which is obvious. But yeah, this is why we need to decompose things. We need to break them down. In living trees, most of the rotting is confined to the old The butt rot again, man. It comes back. In living trees, most of the rotting is confined to the older central wood of roots, stems, or branches, sometimes referred to as the heartwood. Once a tree is cut, however, the outer wood, which is sometimes referred to as sapwood, is also attacked by the wood rotting fungi. All types of wood products are also attacked by these fungi under favorable moisture conditions. Depending on the tree... Wow, wait. Could that imply that I could take a table out into the forest, an old wooden table, make sure it has appropriate moisture levels, and then come back later and find that it has broken down and I find long strings of cellulose, fibrous cellulose, or find brown woody rot on it? Or does it have to be alive for these fungi to infiltrate? Can they... I think most of them are saprotrophic, so I think it has... Does it have to be dead? I don't know. Another one for the question book. Maybe I should try that one day. Just bring a chair out, an old chair, and just see how it decays. Depending on the tree part attacked, wood rots may be called root rots, root and butt rots, stem rots. The fungi that cause the tree or wood product decays grow inside the wood cells and utilize the cell wall components for food and for energy. Some of them, the brown rot fungi, attack preferably softwoods and break down and utilize primarily the cell wall polysaccharides, cellulose and hemicellulose, leaving the lignin more or less unaffected. This usually results in rotten wood that is in some shade of brown and in advanced stages has a cubical pattern of cracking and crumbling texture. Other wood rotters, the white rot fungi, either decompose lignin and hemicellulose first and cellulose last, or decompose all wood components simultaneously, in either case, reducing the wood to its light-colored spongy mass, white rot, which produces white pockets or streaks separated by thin areas of firm wood. The white rot fungi are able to, or preferably, attack hardwoods normally resistant to brown rot fungi. So that's neat. That teaches me that the brown rot fungi can't be... It's harder for them to get at the hardwoods. What is it about the hardwoods that the brown rot can't get at as much? Is it more lignin? Hardwoods. Maybe hard lignin makes it hard. So maybe more lignin. Brown rot's like, I got nothing to do here. So it goes after the conifers. What role does the sap play? The sap compartmentalizes things and can hold it, or the resins can hold things like spores, perhaps, to maybe isolate them and prevent the spread. Yeah, so many questions. That reading, that last little bit, was from Plant Pathology, 4th edition by George N. Agros, published in 1997 by Harcourt Academic Press. I'm gonna have little things for these in all the show notes, and if I can find a PDF for the Field Guide of Tree Diseases of Ontario, I'll include the PDF as well, because that might be a pretty cool resource. Yeah, keep an eye out. Like, every time you go outside, there's probably signs of brown rot or white rot out there on the land, and it's totally worth looking for and keeping on our radar to see if we can discover these things, because they are there, so we must be able to see them. Perhaps not in standing trees all the time, or, yeah, some standing trunks when the tops have fallen off. I think the last time I saw white rot was, standing trunk, probably about 9 or 10 feet tall, and all the trunk, man. You could just reach into the tree and pull it out, and deep inside, it just smelled like soil. It was amazing. It was so cool. Yeah, again, this is all about a study of decomposers, of the things that break stuff down as, you know, what lessons can be pulled from this that teach us more about our lives, about the world around us. And I'm reminded again, you know, like Tom Brown's or John Young's Sacred Questions, if you've ever read any of their stuff, and there's like an expanded form of these questions being like, okay, first observe what happened here. What is this telling me? What is this teaching me on a deeper level? How is this helping me? How is this helping me to help others? And these are questions that I sort of want to roll with this year. Like, I just want to keep these in mind a lot, because I think that they're very valuable. What happened here? What is this telling me? What is it teaching me on a deeper level? How is this helping me? How is this helping me to help others? And I want to continue this helping me and helping others as a continuum beyond the human, not just human helping me and help others, helping, you know, all my neighbors. And so what happened here? I see it. It's rotting, it's breaking things down. What is this telling me? That there is a functional quality to these fungi beyond the edibility or the use, these medicinal uses of humans. What is this teaching me on a deeper level? This is teaching me that the same processes, the same functions of decay, of breaking things down, either like the systems of a tree or the systems that govern and coordinate the world in such a way that's perhaps unhealthy, that they may have other functions that we don't see yet. They can appear on the surface as like some of these manuals and textbooks say, as being detrimental to the economic flows of capitalism. But perhaps that these functions that break down the wood or break down these systems, have medicinal qualities innate within them. Like there's probably healthy things that are going on within them. How is this helping me? Well, it's helping me through metaphor and learning to think in story in a different kind of way. And it's also helping me by teaching me that there's both benefit and harm entwined within each other. And the medicines, the foods, or the possible foods that come from these things, these mushrooms or the medicines from them, can be very good for us. How is this helping me to help others? Well, I hope that not only in those medicines, in those material ways that maybe we can be sharing and teaching each other about with these fungi, which would be good to look into more on a future episode, but also that I believe that breaking down these systems of coercion and control and economic, how do you describe it? I have all these other words that are a bit more impactful, but perhaps, you know, not the most useful right now. A capitalist economies hurt people. And by learning about how we can break them down, we can support ourselves and others and build stronger communities by breaking down resources that are held in monolithic spaces and towers and spread them around into the forest or into greater communities, and thus enriching communities with more nutrient value instead of just hoarding. But a tree isn't hoarding. Maybe it's a weird metaphor there. I want to think about this further. I really do, because there's some other stuff to get at there. I have diverged slightly from what I normally talk about on the show, but you know what? This comes up all the time. This comes up all the time. And I want to actually get into it more. I feel like sometimes my show is too seeing just with one eye. Cyclops vision. And I want to break down that some more. I have a show idea coming up that sort of touches on that. So perhaps I'll get into that in the future. And it's always, yeah, it's always in the blogs too. So a good segue right there. If you want to learn more about the show, if you want to learn about the blog, you can always go to www.toknowtheland.com. There's tons of blog posts, previous episodes back to episode 136, I think it is. What is this? 239 now. And then there's Instagram at To Know The Land. You can email me, toknowtheland@gmail.com. Always open to insights and corrections and suggestions. Someone sent me a really good correction the other day on zygodactyl versus semi-zygodactyl on a thing I wrote about osprey a couple of years ago, which I really appreciate. That was really cool to think about and revisit. If you want to make a donation to the show, that's always welcome. www.toknowtheland.com/donate. That's great. That supports the show. Thank you for the folks on the Patreon. There's a small group there, and that always helps. I really appreciate it. That's it for the show. Thanks for listening. Take care.